And welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, always happy to be joining you right here on Progressive Radio Network. One of the reasons I love doing shows on Progressive Radio is because of the fantastic archive that they have created, and you can go to prn.fm anytime, day or night, and listen to The Natural Nurse. Just scroll down to N and click on Natural Nurse, and they're doing a fantastic job laying out the archives, usually with an appropriate photo, a description of all the different shows that we have. And then you can actually listen to and download for future listening pleasure or sharing with others the actual show. And that's true not only about The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, which is our show, but also lots of other fantastic shows that are podcasts. I think that's the new word we used to say on the radio, but podcast right here on Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have as our guest, Jamie Banks. Jamie is the Executive Director of Quiet Communities. And Quiet Communities is a 501c3 organization that conducts research and provides education and outreach to help communities transition to clean, quiet, sustainable, and healthy landscape maintenance practices. After many years of working in healthcare economics and health outcomes research, she shifted her activities to the area of environmental health and science. In 2007, she founded Planet Rewards, and in 2013, she founded Quiet Communities. And she earned her PhD at the University of Kent in the UK in social policies, including health economics and outcomes, and holds master's degrees from Dartmouth Medical School and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. So Jamie is very well educated in what we would call conventional education, but she brings us today her expertise in terms of something very, very important to you, and that is what is going on in your community in terms of lawn maintenance. So thank you so much for joining us today, Jamie.
It's a pleasure, Ellen. Thank you for having me.
Now, you've been doing this for quite a while because it's sort of evolved into being what you call now Quiet Communities. What made you actually set this up as a not-for-profit organization?
Part of it was prompted by where I live. I live in a town called Lincoln, Massachusetts. We share with Concord, Massachusetts, Walden Pond. We're also home to the Mass Audubon Society. And the town has very strong rural and environmental values. But over the years and up to today, a lot of noise and pollution coming from landscape crews has invaded our communities. And where I live, the crews start as early as 6:45 in the morning, and that noise can go on for hours. As someone who works at home, I have found it impossible to stay at home and work. And it's very difficult to get away from the noise. This is noise that comes right through the walls of the home. And, you know, just opening the door, there's so much of this work going on that you smell gas fumes. So this, you know, quiet, once quiet rural community has been, has changed. So once
I have to say that's very true. I have two homes, one in Oyster Bay, Long Island, and another one in Deerfield Beach, Florida, and both of them are sort of condo co-op communities. And I actually have to schedule my life around the days that I know we will be completely invaded with this horrible noise as well as gas fumes. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I guess I never realized that people actually can take steps to try to tone that down a little bit, which I guess is the real focus of your work with Quiet Communities.
Yeah, a couple of things. You know, once I started to research the issue, I realized that this was a widespread problem, just as you're suggesting. You know, Massachusetts, New York, Connecticut, out on the West Coast, down in Florida, even up in places like Maine. In fact, I started talking with people in different communities, and some of them said they were either considering or had actually sold their homes because that problem got so bad.
But it sounds like you're putting together programs and steps that people can take if they work together. In fact, just this morning I sent the research that has been accumulated by your organization and by a woman who was on my show yesterday in the Long Island area about this very topic. And I'm planning to do a presentation at my community. So this is something that people can do because you've gathered together a wonderful grouping of information that supports the topics which we'll be discussing today.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, our vision is for landscape maintenance to be quiet, non-intrusive, non-polluting, produce little if any greenhouse gases, nurture and support ecosystems, and reduce dependence on toxic chemicals. So in addition to research, while we're becoming knowledgeable about this problem and its impacts, we're very focused on developing effective solutions, as you suggested.
Well, you have to do that because people are very committed to having their grounds look a certain way. And I think the disconnect comes with the fact that we don't need to use all these toxic practices in order to have a well-maintained lawn, if that's your goal.
Yeah, no, that's correct. The way we are doing things now, the industry is almost totally dependent on gas-powered equipment. In fact, there's about 120 million pieces of gas-powered lawn and garden equipment in use today in the U.S. And the industry has doubled in size over the past 15 years, and we now do very little manually. We have these machines to do everything. They're quite polluting and very noisy, and they have serious health and environmental impacts.
Yes, which we will review in depth. But yesterday, one of the things that came up was, you know, when you think about, let's say in my community, they're using edgers. And I believe those are gas-powered as well. They make a lot of noise, which cuts the little edge of the grass. And then they come along with this horrific giant leaf blower just to blow those little teeny pieces of grass that came onto the sidewalk with the edger. And what the guest talked about yesterday, and I'm sure you would concur, is she just asked her gardeners to use brooms. And it works just as well, just as fast, and was healthier for the environment and for the gardeners themselves. And they were shocked. They were young workers who had never tried using a broom before.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that. Customers have forgotten that they are the customer, and they can tell their contractors how they would like things done. I've heard over and over again stories of people saying, you know, I asked my gardener to stop, and lo and behold, they did. And my the prices have not gone up, my neighbors are not disturbed, and I'm much happier as a result.
Right. And you could even buy the brooms. I mean, it's not such a tremendous thing. Now, what about, you know, there is an issue with leaves in the fall, because then we're talking about, you know, giant, giant amounts of leaves. So are there other ways to handle that, or would it be or just a short-term use of something like those very loud and gas-producing leaf blowers?
Well, one thing we haven't really spoken about yet is that technology is now at a place where cordless electric commercial-grade equipment is practical. This equipment is on the market. A lot of people don't know about it. There are contractors, especially large companies, that are invested in gas equipment. But as that equipment starts to get phased out, they have an opportunity to replace it. Now, with regard to the fall cleanups, that is difficult. There are some economic issues apparently involved. I've heard enough landscapers testify to this. the greenest ones included, that they really do need to use this to go from job to job. However, there are opportunities for electric technology in the space in conjunction with manual tools. And the blowers that are coming onto the market today are almost just as powerful as the gas blowers. You know, so some electric blowers with a couple of rakes, some tarps can do the job nicely.
And so that's what's so good about your organization, Quiet Communities. You've put together a tremendous amount of research and instructions on how people can go about beginning the discussion, whether they, of course, own their own home. Then it's an easy discussion. It's do what I say or you're fired. You know, it's a very easy discussion. And, of course, it can be brought forth in a softer way, like I would prefer if. But then when you're involved in a full community like yourself, there are many people who perhaps live around Walden Pond. If you tell your maintenance people to do it a certain way, what about your neighbors?
Well, that's right. I mean, one of the things that we've done in my town and is starting to happen in other towns as well is that we have developed a list of what we call quiet contractors, people and companies willing to practice clean and quiet maintenance. And we've put this list up on our town website so that people can access it. And the feedback we've gotten from people that formerly used gas power companies switching to these quiet contractors has been very, very positive.
Oh, well, so then you build it to where it's a reference point for others to tune into.
Right. It starts to become a referral network.
So let's start talking about some of these gas-powered landscape maintenance practices. What are some of the machines that are used? We mentioned a couple of them. And then we really can go pretty deeply into research about how the negative health effects that actually have been tracked scientifically.
Yes, that's correct.
So some of the tools that we're talking about here would be, I guess, power mowers, the edgers,
right. So
and the leaf blowers are
a
big concern.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, let's separate for a moment homeowners from commercial companies. I'm mainly going to focus the discussion today on commercial landscape maintenance practices. So what you have here, you have diesel and gas-powered mowers. Really industrial-strength mowers that, unfortunately, are being used for jobs both large and small. They come off the truck. It could be a gigantic lawn or it could be, you know, a shoulder or border, and you see these enormous machines being used, which are very polluting. The EPA says they're about 11 times more polluting than cars. But then you also have a variety of handheld equipment, smaller engines that the vast majority are two-stroke engines, and these are very inefficient burners of fuel, highly polluting, much more polluting by size and weight than the mowers are. So these are leaf blowers and vacuums, edgers, trimmers, hedge cutters, and the like.
So everyone's quite familiar with those, yes.
I think so. At least in many suburbs and certainly in many urban areas as well.
Yeah, it was interesting. We had a guest call in on the last show we did on this topic who said he actually moved from the suburbs to Queens, for those of you who are familiar with the boroughs around the New York area, because in Queens they did not use the blowers. And he found that it was actually quieter, that a lot of the landscapers had smaller areas to work in, and that was one of the things he was fleeing, which I found really interesting.
It's funny.
But certainly
I've
in
heard,
the suburbs, everyone has heard, and they do start very early, at 8 a.m. You were saying...
Thank you for listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
The story behind the story, your story, my story. It's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Eutrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
You're listening to PRN.
And we're back. I believe we had a little bit of interference noise. Let's hope that it's good. Are you still there, Jamie?
I am. I am, Ellen. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's funny because we're talking about noise, so the noise demon must have got involved here in our show. But nonetheless, hopefully we'll be back. Our engineer advised us that we are back, and I want to reintroduce you that we are talking to Jamie Banks. She is the executive director of Quiet Communities in Lincoln, Massachusetts, but she works with people all over the country so that they can help their community and their yard to start with, if you own your own home, transition to clean, quiet, sustainable, and healthy landscape maintenance practices, which is very important. And you were just going to start to tell us also, Jamie, about what are some of the negative health effects associated with the use of these gas-powered lawn maintenance equipment?
There's actually several impacts. When we're talking about health, we're really talking about the air pollution that comes from these machines as well as the noise. The kinds of air pollution that come out of these machines are ones that have been already very strictly regulated for cars and trucks, but not for these kinds of equipment. So you have a class of compounds called volatile organic compounds, or hydrocarbons, and then these, in the presence of nitrogen oxide and sunlight, form ground-level ozone, which is known to be bad for respiratory health. Other toxic substances that are produced in exhaust emissions are carbon monoxide, and then fine particulate matter. So these compounds are all toxic and or carcinogenic on their own. They also, apart from cancer, can cause early death, heart attack, stroke, congestive heart failure. They can worsen asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And it's turning out that more and more studies are coming out suggesting there may even be a link to childhood autism and other neurological problems. Now, the just to finish, it doesn't require long-term exposure to some of these substances to have a harmful effect. In fact, more and more studies are coming out suggesting that short-term exposure can also be harmful. And the evidence is extensive. There's been statements from American Lung Association, American Heart Association, the World Health Organization, and the US EPA, all agreeing on the harmful effects of these kinds of pollution. Now, when we talk about noise, these machines are very, very loud at the point of operation. Let's just focus on leaf blowers for a moment. You have decibel levels, and decibels are the unit in which loudness of noise is measured, of 95 to 115 decibels. This is approximately the same type of noise level that you get in a loud rock concert. Now, under the occupational safety and health regulations, this noise is harmful and requires workers to wear ear protection. But for the rest of us standing around, we don't have any of that kind of protection, nor do we have respiratory protection to protect us from the pollution.
So what you're saying is that laws that recognize the negative health effects of these levels, both of air pollution, such as particulate matter, inhalation of gas residues, as well as the decibel of noise created, is already been proven to be negative, enough so that there are regulations in other industries in terms of these levels, but yet not for these maintenance, these lawn maintenance equipment. Well, certainly I know the people who actually use the equipment don't usually have any kind of protective gear on either.
Well, that's right. And when you think of the groups that are at risk, workers have to be at the top of the list. Workers are using this equipment hours a day, many days a week in seasons of use. And as you said, many have wear no protection at all. A lot of the people that you see working on the lawns may not be employees of companies. They may not have had training and may not even be aware that the sorts of things they're breathing in day to day or the levels of noise they're hearing can be harmful to their health.
And, of course, if they are undocumented workers, they're certainly not going to complain.
That's right. They need the jobs.
They're happy to have the job regardless of how toxic it might be. Well, we're going to go to a very short break here, so that will bring you, listeners, the Natural Medicine Chest. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Jamie Banks, and you can find out more at quietcommunities.org. And one thing we'd like to do, Jamie, is perhaps review some of the specific studies that we know about that really do link the pollution, both noise and air, caused by this kind of lawn maintenance equipment. So we can actually perhaps review or look at some of the studies that actually have been done. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla, or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, Sar sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sar sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of Sar sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British inspector general of hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sar sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopoeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sar sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of Sar sarsaparilla called sarsaparin greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sar sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for Sar sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beer flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the Sar sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
are back. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we'd love you to join us in person, on the ground, or online. If you go to naturalnurse.com and click on schedules, you will see the many presentations that we have going on all the time, all over the country, somewhere near you. And online, we actually teach herbal certification courses that you can take from anywhere and get a certification in herbal medicine. We also have on-ground classes where you join us in the field and we gather wild and edible plants and make them into medicine. Some of the places we do that is at Gilberti's Organic Herb Farm, and that is in Connecticut, and also Restoration Farm in Bethpage, New York. And in Florida, we have several locations where we do that as well, and as I said, also online. We'll be doing a presentation in Saratoga Springs, New York, on the health benefits of natural mineral spring water. We'll also be doing an outside herbal identification workshop there as well. And we'll be lecturing on herbs for pain right at the Saratoga Springs. We have classes in Chinatown, New York, where we learn about tongue and pulse diagnosis, how to actually use herbs for yourself and your family. And we go into the underground of Chinatown to look at herbal manufacturing facilities that are actually FDA approved. In addition, we take people on yearly excursions to live with indigenous healers in the jungle, and we go to several areas, including the island of Jamaica. Those trips are always in March because they go along with school break, because we have so many students come, since you do get credit, college credit, for joining us in the field for 5 days, living and studying with indigenous shamanic healers. So Dr. Zamperone and I have been doing this for 27 years. We enjoy it very much, and we'd love for you to join us. Of course, we've written many books as well. If you go to naturalnurse.com and click on books, you'll see all the books that we have written. And so all kinds of ways to interact with us. And we love watching our clicker of people who are listening to our podcast. It's up to 130,000. We really appreciate that, and we'd love to hear from you. Today, our guest is Jamie Banks. She is the Executive Director of Quiet Communities, located in Lincoln, Massachusetts, and that is a 501c3 organization that conducts research and provides education and outreach to help communities transition to clean, quiet, sustainable, and healthy landscape maintenance practices. After many years working in healthcare economics and health outcomes research, she shifted her activity to the area of environmental health and science, and she founded Planet Rewards. In 2013, she founded Quiet Communities. She earned her PhD at the University of Kent in the UK and in social policy, and holds master's degrees from Dartmouth Medical School and MIT. And we are so pleased to have her on board with us today, sharing her story, personal advocacy, as well as community advocacy of basically quieting down our communities with good reason. So thank you so much for joining us today, Jamie.
Well, thank you again, Ellen.
Now, you've shared quite a bit with us about the kinds of things that we're looking at in terms of health impacts of blowers, but some very, very studies as well I'd like to share has been done.
Ellen, you're breaking up. Hello?
The Progressive Radio News Hour is an antidote to government and corporate propaganda. Distinguished guests are featured. Some are world figures. All are independent thinkers. Truth and full disclosure are featured. Vital domestic and world issues mattering most are discussed. Today is the most perilous time in world history. Ukraine's crisis escalated things dangerously. It's the gravest one since World War II. A potential clash of civilizations looms. More than ever, vital information is needed. It's our most precious commodity. How we use it matters most. Peace and security depend on it. The Progressive Radio News Hour, three times weekly, live on Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, plus two pre-recorded archive programs. Make it a regular habit and stay informed.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to invite you to listen to Warrior Connection on the Progressive Radio Network. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we're doing the best we can for the veterans of our nation. Warrior Connection is an ongoing discussion with veterans, scientists, politicians, journalists, reporters, and doctors about the health and environmental effects of war on our nation's veterans. Our purpose is to provide the information necessary for all veterans to lead a productive life. Thank you very much, and God bless America.
Have you ever listened to Anthony Robbins, watched the movie called The Secret, or read about the power of positive thinking from the perspective of any of the many fine authors who have written about the subject? They all focus on the law of attraction, which governs every second of every life of every person in the universe. Like attracts like, and everything you do, feel, and think about as a regular way of being determines your life experiences. PRN's new show, LOA Today, explores all.
So are we back? Jamie, are you there?
Yes, I am, Ellen. Thanks.
I'm totally not sure what's going on. We're just having a little technical difficulty today. Perhaps the demons of the lawn blowers, I don't know, are affecting us. But let's move forward. I know you were just about to share with us some of the science that shows these health risks associated with leaf blowers and other gasoline lawn equipment.
Okay. So one thing is that, just to say up front, there's very little that specifically ties lawnmowers and leaf blowers and other small equipment to the health effects, but there is some. There were some studies done in 2007, 2008 out of Colorado State. Dr. John Volkens and his group studied the kinds of pollution from these small engines and enumerated the health effects of the pollutants at that time. Since then, though, if we can make the leap that these small engines produce these kinds of pollutants and, in turn, these kinds of pollutants that produce disease, I don't think it's a stretch to say that the machines themselves and the pollutions they cause can be harmful to health when people are exposed in close proximity. Now, there's so much evidence out there. There's literally hundreds and hundreds of studies. And the evidence is so extensive that there are now several consensus reports, meaning that groups of experts have studied and synthesized all the scientific information out there and put together reports indicating that there is broad agreement on the health effects of the kinds of air pollution produced from these machines, as well as noise pollution. And what I can do is refer your listeners to some of those extensive high-level reports.
That's
there are
excellent.
Two by
I know
the
one
Environmental
I'm looking
Protection
at
Agency.
Environmental noise, the environmental noise pollution in the United States, developing an effective public health response, which was published in Environmental Health Perspectives, and I believe that was in February 2014, fairly recently, and they actually do go into, you know, steps that can be taken and the fact that it is a proven link to many different kinds of suffering that people have, such as heart disease and hearing loss, just to name a couple of them. So it certainly is valid. Like you said, it was not done on leaf blowers, but it is certainly done on noise pollution.
Right, and there are materials that have been produced by various medical agencies that talk about the harmful effects of these machines. So even though there's not specific scientific literature, or at least a great deal of it, there is a recognition by the medical community that the pollution and noise from these machines is harmful. And you can find us. Some of these references are posted on our website. But what I would refer your listeners to are two reports from the Environmental Protection Agency. They're called Integrated Science Assessments. One is for ozone and other oxidants. The other is for fine particulate pollution. Another one is the American Lung Association's State of the Air Report, which is produced annually. And here they conclude, one of the conclusions, for example, is that short-term exposure to particle pollution can kill. Deaths can occur on the very day that particle levels are high or within 1 or 2 months afterwards. Now, if you see the dust from a leaf blower on the road, that's ground particles. Some of them are fine particles. There's other exhaust emissions that are very fine that can lodge deep in the lung, and this is the kind of exposure that they're talking about. And then on the noise side, as you mentioned, Richard Neitzel, Monica Hammer, and their colleagues at University of Michigan have put together that policy report on noise and calling for a federal policy to deal with high levels of noise and help prevent resulting disease. They also have a follow-up study about the cost of only the cardiovascular complications, but estimate that this cost is in the billions of dollars every year. This is not including any of the hearing loss, tinnitus, or any other problems. And then a very large study in environmental noise was done by the World Health Organization. This is called Burden of Disease Attributed to Environmental Noise in 2011. There is a widespread recognition that noise is a health hazard in Western Europe, but not yet in the United States.
And, well, that's a good thing to bring up in Western Europe, where they tend to have much more progressive policies that support people's health. Are they limiting the use of this equipment? Is this a United States issue?
I think it's mainly been a United States issue. When I've gone over there, I've started to see these machines in use. And there was even, I think, on the island of Cyprus, attempts to limit the use of leaf blowers, but it's been much less than in the United States, but presumably, you know, if they gain more popularity, these are going to attract a lot more attention.
That's true. And certainly they're attacking your attention because you're trying to sit in your beautiful, pristine home, and you really have to leave the day that the leaf blowers are there. That's just amazing, and I'm sure many people, when they're thinking about that, really feel that way. I know they come around my house on Wednesday, and I actually can't schedule, intense phone meetings since I work from home at that time either, because it really is that disruptive to the entire location. And I always wonder about those guys, you know, who are out there using them. So now about the particulate matter, what about if children are around, aren't they even more sensitive to the little, pieces of oil, or is it pieces of leaf that are blown up by these devices?
It's really all kinds of things, and I'm very glad that you brought that up because children are among the most vulnerable groups to suffer adverse effects from these kinds of pollution and noise as well. The reasons are that they have higher breathing rates. They tend to breathe more through their mouth and not have the benefit of that nasal filtration. They play much closer to the ground. They spend more time outdoors. And their organ systems are developing. They really can't afford to be inhaling these kinds of toxic and carcinogenic pollutants and listening to noise that damages the ear and is irreversible.
That's a good point. And what other groups might be most effective besides children?
The elderly are another high-risk group. They tend to have chronic illness, respiratory illnesses, heart conditions, things that can be worsened easily by these kinds of pollutions. And then, in general, people with those kinds of chronic illnesses.
Well, yeah, so many people have asthma, and of course, asthma has definitely been linked to pollution rates, which is why it seems to be higher in inner city areas.
Well, that's right. And another point to make is that it's not just exhaust emissions and simple dust. There's all kinds of substances that can be contained in that dust. It could be herbicides, pesticides, fungus, molds, you know, different kinds of pollens, things better left on the ground. There's also been cited things even like dried animal feces and diesel soot, you know, again, depending on the surface that's being blown.
Oh, that's true. So whatever is there is going to be blown up into the air. Now, how did we manage to have, you know, very nice-looking lawns before the advent and onslaught of this kind of equipment?
Well, that's a very good question. There's, I think, a mentality of manicured as being the preferred look, or curb appeal, and these kinds of aesthetics that people perceive as increasing their property value. And people aren't really knowledgeable that, you know, depleting our soils and drying them out with these methods is really not good for our plants or the ecosystems that sustain them.
So what is the advantage of using these things, you'd have to wonder? Obviously, the sales of the equipment to those who manufacture them.
Well, that's always true. You know, when we have it, they have to find a use, and the industry has taken this up. And, of course, there are campaigns even to push the four-season use of leaf blowers. This all translates to dollars for the manufacturers. There's also, this is a very lucrative industry. You know, the service industry and the equipment industry in total is close to $70 billion a year. Gas-powered equipment, you not only have equipment sales, but you also have sales of parts and service that you don't have nearly as much of with the electric equipment.
Right. So there are some people who it's a big advantage to them to keep this, which is now the status quo. As you said, it's really a new status quo. It's only about 15 years old, or not much more than that, that it's been so prolific throughout suburbia.
Yeah, it depends on what part of the country. In California, this started a bit earlier, but, you know, we've seen it here for about 15 years, as you say.
Well, I do want to, in fact, share some research that I did, which was used in California, because I was contacted by Stephen Halperin. Many people may know Mr. Halperin because he is really the father of what's called New Age music. And New Age music is very, very calm. It's kind of the antithesis of what you feel when you listen to a leaf blower. So Stephen Halperin actually contacted me because I do work with the dark field microscope. And he had me do an experiment with, of course, we used his music, as often is the case in any kind of research. The person who is backing the research gets to choose, you know, what you're going to use. So I probably could have used Beethoven or Bach or some other, you know, more soothing kind of music. But, of course, we used Mr. Halperin's beautiful, beautiful music, which is called the Crystal Suite. And what I did was took 100 people. We did a baseline reading of their blood cells under a dark field microscope, and then we split them into two groups. One group listened through headphones to a recording of a leaf blower, and then right after following that exposure, I looked at their white blood cell motility, looking at how well their white blood cells are moving around and engulfing any kind of invading microorganisms. That is actually how our immune system functions, one part of our immune system. And then we did the same test with the other half of the group there for the experimentation, and they listened to Stephen Halperin's Crystal Suite. And then we looked at their blood cells under the microscope, and there was such an incredible and marked difference in that those who listened to the leaf blower had a substantial decrease in their white blood cell motility, which means their immune system was basically turned off, while those who had listened to Mr. Halperin's music actually had an increase in the activity of their white blood cells from baseline. He took the video of this presentation to his town board, which was in somewhere near Hollywood, California, where he lives, and he was able to change, not completely get rid of the leaf blowers, but change the use permits so that the time they were used was very restricted from, I believe it was 12 noon to 4 p.m., and that's it. They could not start in at 7 a.m., and people in communities actually had to get little warning letters under their door that the leaf blowers were going to be in use from 12 noon to 4 p.m. So that was really, you know, a change that was able to be initiated by looking at a specific health effect. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Oh, I didn't know that I was supposed to give a response, but
no,
very,
very
interesting.
No, I just was checking in because we're about to, you know, actually do a little station ID right now. And when we come back, we want to talk about some of the great solutions that your organization has come up with and how people can make a change moving forward. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
You are listening to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Dr. Cheryl Selman, the host of What Women Must Know. As a naturopathic doctor, psychotherapist, author, and women's health advocate, I've discovered that there is a lot that women must know when it comes to their health and hormones. So whatever your hormonal or health challenge may be, the answers are waiting for you at What Women Must Know. Where leading authors and holistic practitioners, researchers, and wise elders will give you the keys to getting your hormones back on track naturally. Be sure to listen every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM. And if you didn't catch it live, you can listen 24/7 on the archive. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
You're listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Okay, and we are back once again right here on Progressive Radio Network. And we are here with our guest today who's talking about the environmental impact of gas-powered lawn equipment and the changes that can be made. And this is Jamie Banks of Quiet Community. You can find out more at quietcommunities.org, and we will have this show posted on our archives as well. So welcome back, Jamie.
Thank you, Ellen.
Okay, so now what can people do about it? We talked about the fact that there are noise ordinances. Perhaps they could look up the noise ordinances in their area and then would have to show that this equipment interferes with that. I mean, what have people done that have successfully either limited or removed the use of this equipment?
Well, with regard to regulations, the reputation is quite spotty. In some towns and cities, regulation has been very effective and enforced. In others, it's been very frustrating for citizens. Even though there might be an ordinance, a noise ordinance, or a leaf blower ordinance on the books, the enforcement may not be behind it, and so you're not really addressing the problem. Our approach, while we certainly support regulations, is also to pursue other alternatives. As we mentioned, just asking your contractor not to use gas-powered equipment for everything, to pick up a broom or a rake when that's appropriate. We need to educate people. People really need to understand that there's a problem here in order to invest in solutions. And people need to know that there are now good alternatives. Cordless, commercial-grade, lithium battery-powered equipment is now practical and cost-effective. We need to
Why are they better? So you're talking about something called cordless lithium battery equipment. Why would that make an improved situation?
Well, these are machines that have no emissions at point of operation, and actually they can be have zero emissions because you can power them using renewable energy, solar power, for instance. That the newer versions are much quieter than the older ones, so you're getting much less noise. The combination of no emissions, quiet equipment lets you practice in a much cleaner way. It's much better for workers because they're not exposed to the noise, the air pollution, or all the kinds of solvents and toxic chemicals that they're using to maintain the equipment, as well as, you know, gas spillage when they refuel the equipment.
Okay, so it actually could be a cost-saving alternative. I don't know what the difference is in terms of the cost of the equipment for the maintenance crew.
Well, the cost right now is higher, and this is mainly because of lithium battery technology being new, not really having the sort of scale that we have for the gas machines as yet. However, over time, you can break even, and then you have the benefit as a contractor of all the savings that accrue from no oil, no gas, and very little maintenance. And this has been demonstrated in places in California that you start to generate those savings quite early on if you're a busy contractor.
Okay, so you have data on your website that people can sort of grab onto and then do a presentation perhaps in their own community?
Yes, we will have. We work closely with another organization called the American Green Zone Alliance, which is actually doing a lot of work on the ground in California to maintain properties quietly and without gas. They've done some pilot projects. They have formed what they call certified green zones, and have measured the outcomes, both from an emission standpoint, a noise standpoint, and other impacts.
Okay, and I do want to tell our listeners that on our archived show here, we do have a link directly to that organization as well. And what it is www.agza.net. And they actually are taking a lot of this information, working in concert with quiet communities and making changes that actually benefit both the workers tremendously and the communities which they serve. So it's sort of one of those win-win situations. And by putting this kind of pressure, we certainly can create change over time. If people, you know, I would say people who own their own home can and really take these steps immediately and just talk to their contractor. And they can even buy a couple brooms, let's say, and say, look, here's rakes and brooms in my garage, and I want your guys to use this as a, you know, a little bit of cleanup at the end of the work to just avoid. I'm not sure why they need those big leaf blowers. When I see them, I don't see what they're blowing, especially, of course, I do see it in the fall when there's big piles of leaves. But is it really necessary or is it overkill to use it for small jobs, such as just when they do the edging of the lawn?
Well, we think that there's a lot of excessive and inappropriate use going on. We see it in our own communities. We've seen it in other communities. We hear it from different people around the country that, you know, the people that are working these machines use them regardless of the task at hand.
Well, right, and they're being told to. Obviously. So you're talking about the workers, they are following the maintenance person's direction. So they're not just doing it on their own. It's just standards of practice, shall we say.
Yes, that's right. And I'll also say that there are regulations or, excuse me, guidelines that the manufacturers have put out that are generally not complied with. You know, don't blow dust, don't run them at full throttle in a residential neighborhood. You know, don't use them late in the day, you know, when people are home. Don't use more than one at a time. Things like this are in the published guidelines, but rarely do you see them adhered to.
It's true. And, you know, my husband doesn't like, I don't think he's so worried about the environmental impact so much as his garden and his plants, which is another good reason, because the excessive blowing actually breaks plants, which is not necessary at all. And he'll just go out there and make that sign, you know, like someone says, go slow. And they immediately, you know, the guys, like, they laugh and they lower it to where it's a very quiet sound and it's not breaking all the plants apart. So that's such an easy thing to change.
Well, that's right. I mean, these practices desiccate the soil. They can blow off a lot of nurturing organic materials that are essential to soil health. You're basically directing a 200-mile-per-hour air jet at the ground, you know, held inches from the ground, and it's no wonder that things are getting damaged, you know. But again, it's that manicured, sterile look that people think is the best thing to have, but really not good for our ecosystems or environment. There's damage to...
And I think also, you know, you bring this information out and putting it together in a place that can be so easily accessed at quietcommunities.org means each person can take personal steps to change it. We don't actually need a change in government policy. I think the government policy is already in place. We can just, if we own our home, just change it, like right now. Go speak to your gardener next time he's there and say, don't use the leaf blowers until, let's say, it's the fall and he has to with big piles of leaves. Here's brooms and rakes. Let the guys use this. I mean, it doesn't have to be a master plan. And you could work on a larger level and make policy changes in your community. It seems like something that could be fairly easily done.
Ellen, I think I would add one thing, too, is that advocating for some kind of financial incentive so that contractors can get over that initial hump of the higher price.
That's a good idea.
They've done this in different
places
around the country,
don't we get those kinds of things
when
we buy a more competitive car? You know, you get little breaks. So that would be a very, very good thing to advocate for and could quickly change. Like if a business was about to invest in new equipment, they could just buy the cordless lithium battery equipment instead.
That's right. That's right.
And maybe get some, you know, some kind of monetary benefit from doing that. Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today. Sorry about the little bit of technical difficulties. I never know where those gremlins come from, maybe from the leaf blowers. But Jamie Banks, thank you so much, Executive Director of Quiet Communities. And just please do give our listeners the best way to get in touch with more information about this topic.
We'll do that. And thank you very much, Ellen, for having us.
Okay, and you can visit quietcommunities.org and also agza.net. Both of these things, along with Jamie's information and contact, will be on our website under our archives of today's show. So thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to being with you next time. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, along with my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. He's Dr. Z. We remain wishing you the best and hope that you stay healthy.